Good evening. It's good to see everybody this evening. Over the last couple of weeks, I've been thinking a lot about all the issues and the adversity that we as a congregation have gone through. And I can't remember a time that we've had more requests for prayers and issues than we've had in the last 12 months, not only here, but even when I was at Wansley. We've gone through everything from job losses to death, to cancer, to kidney stones. So we've been through a lot together over the last 12 months as a congregation. I've had several conversations with George and Jamie and JP, and when I'm going through all the issues that I've been going through, and we all come to the conclusion that the devil works harder on the people that he doesn't have versus the ones that he does have. I mean, for instance, it's a whole lot easier to work with somebody that doesn't believe that, drinking and drugs and carousing around is wrong to begin with. So he has them, so it's a lot. He spends a lot of time working on us. So when I was discussing that with him and we were coming to these conclusions, I was also talking with a gentleman that is also a fellow Christian at work. And while we were discussing this line of thought of why the devil works harder on us and the things that he's been going through as well, he's lost his mother last week and also has his mother-in-law living with him at his house as well. And while we were talking about it, one of the other individuals that sits near us listened to the conversation. And when he came up, he walked up to us and said, "Well, why do you guys still have a good attitude? Because we're always positive about things. We're not griping. We're just discussing how we're going to overcome these adversities and how good God is to us." And he asked us, "Well, why do you have this attitude that you have? That you're able to go through all of this, all the things that your church is going through, and not be pulling your hair out?" And I turned and looked at him and just told him, "Well, God doesn't close a door without opening a window. And, fortunately, I'm at a place where I can work with the Bible on my desk." So I opened it up and I read to him 1 Corinthians 13, where God tells us, "There's no temptation has overtaken you except what is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able. But with temptation will also make a way of escape that you may not be able, or you may be able to bear it." So he's telling us he's not going to give us more than we can bear. And then he looked me square in the eye and says, "Well, then," and kind of welling up, because apparently he had been going through a lot as well, says, "Then why does God let things happen if he happen to us like this, if he loves us so much?" And I've been thinking a lot about what I wanted to say, because he turned and walked away before I could actually give him an answer. So I've been thinking quite a bit, how do I want to approach him? What do I want to say? Because I don't want to give him the standards, that most people give us, that, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, which really is true. But I wanted to give him something beyond that. So in thinking about it, I was thinking about a prayer that JP gave a little while back, and he prayed that my family would gain strength through our adversity. And when I decided to think deeper about that thought, I also think about the saying that we always say, that, the school of hard knocks, and that he was taught by being thrown into the fire. I mean, how many times have you gone to a brand new job, and the first thing they do is give you a little lecture, teach you a little bit, and then throw you right into it to learn how to do it? I mean, all my life it's been that way. In the military, it's been that way as an engineer, that you get some teachings, but the best way to learn is through your psychomotor skills. In other words, through experiential learning. Barbara and Ginger, that's what they do. And their grade levels is all experiential learning. So there's some wisdom to that being thrown into the fire. And I started thinking back into the Bible. Now, how do I want to explain to him from the Bible why God lets these things happen to us? And fire is actually used several times throughout the Old and the New Testament as a metaphor to let us know how we will be tested and then how we're supposed to learn and grow from it. In other words, like John 14:1 says, "Let thy heart not be troubled," right? That God is in control. We need to keep that in mind. If you look in 1 Peter 6:7, it says, "In this you greatly rejoice, through now for a little while, if need be, you have been grieved by various trials, that the genuineness of your faith, being much more precious than gold that perishes, though it is tested by fire, may be found to praise, honor, and glory at the revelation of Christ. So what Peter is trying to tell us in this point is that true faith, real faith, is the faith that is still in place after artificial layers have been stripped away by your trials and tribulations. The Christian that proves faithful through trials and temptations will receive God's praise at Christ's return. So, analogy that I use is like a true friend. How many of you got all of these people that you call friends, but the minute something happens, the minute you need them, they're like oil and water when you drop a rock and they're gone, and then they come back when the trial is over and the rock is sank. But a true faith will be there no matter what these trials are. And unfortunately, we as humans tend to be pessimistic. We tend to see these trials as a never-ending battle and not look at the blessings that we have while we have these trials. We focus on the negative unless we as Christians know and keep in mind that God truly is in control. Life's not a monorail. You know, most people look at life as, oh, there's going to be good times and then bad times and then good times and then bad times, and that's not true. Life's like a railroad track. You actually run them parallel to one another. So while you're going through your bad times, take the time to look at the other side of the track and look at the blessings that you truly have. So one of the things when I was looking through this, I happened to open Newsweek, unfortunately. And Newsweek has a poll in there that alleges that 67% of Americans are unhappy. And I find that amazing. In the most blessed country in the world, that 67% of the people polled believe that they are truly unhappy in this country. And is it that we have electricity, you know, running 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and we have running water that makes us so unhappy? Is our unhappiness a result that having air conditioning in the summer and heating in the winter is so bad? You know, could it be that 95.4% of these unhappy folks have a job? Maybe it's the ability to walk into a grocery store and in 1 minute see more food than Darfar has seen in a year. You know, I guess it's having thousands of restaurants of varying cuisines throughout from around the world that makes us truly unhappy, or it's not good enough for us. Or could it be that we wreck our car and within minutes emergency workers show up that are well trained that can save you and then if need be call a helicopter to fly you to the nearest hospital? Perhaps it's one of the 70% of the Americans who own a home that are so unhappy. You may be upset then that if you have a problem or a fire or a burglary, that within minutes that a well-trained professional will show up and put the fire out or stop the robbery to save your home, to save your possessions and your family. Maybe that's what's making us so happy. Or maybe it's the complete religious freedom and social and political freedoms that we have in our country that most of the world would love to have that makes us so unhappy. Or this one blows me away, the 90% of teenagers that own a cell phone. That maybe that's what makes us so unhappy. Actually, that makes me unhappy when I get the bill. So I find it amazing how unhappy we are as Americans. And for another example I have is recently Rachel and I and Leah were looking at this group of kids and actually adults that are in it that are called EMO. It's short for emotional. And what they do is this group of people that actually don't really have anything to be upset about. They don't have anything to be depressed about, but they wear the clothes and they wear the dark makeup and they walk around and they make up things to be depressed about. That's amazing that we live in a country that you have a group of people in a club, and go on the internet and research it, it'll blow your mind, that they have to make up things to be depressed about. It blows me away. And especially when you look at Malachi 3:3 says, he will sit as a refiner and purifier of silver. That's referring to the character and the nature of God. And if you don't understand what that means, then you need to understand how silver is purified. The way a silversmith makes silver is he takes it and he puts it into the fire. But not only does he put it in the fire, he actually puts it in the middle of the fire. If you know physics, that actually is the hottest part of the flame. That's engulfing it all the way around. So not only does he put it in the fire, but he has to sit there every single second and watch it. Because if he doesn't, if it sits in there one little second longer than it needs to be, it ruins the silver. So he actually has to watch it every second. And the way he knows that it's actually purified, the way he it's processed, is it's not time. It has nothing to do with time. It has everything to do with the look of the silver. The way he knows is when he sees his own reflection in the silver. That's how he knows it's time to pull it out of the fire. If he leaves it in the fire 1 second too long, it ruins the silver. Can you see the parallel? So it's really important that God knows our strengths, and he knows our weaknesses. He knows when to hold us in the fire, and he knows when to pull us out of the fire. If today you're feeling the heat of the fire, remember that God has his eye on you the whole time, and he's going to keep watching you until he sees his image in you. That's when he knows when to pull you out. At this very moment, we need to know that God is watching over us, and and whatever you and I are going through right now, which in this congregation happens to be a whole lot, not just me personally, but pretty much everybody that I see in front of me has something going on in their life that is a trial or a tribulation or an issue. So keep in mind that at the end of all of this refining, you'll be a better person, a better Christian, and closer to God. One thing to remember is life is a coin. You can only spend it one time. Which side of the coin are you going to reflect on the most? The negative side or the positive side? You can only spend it once. So if you're a Christian and you want to start living your life the way Christ intended you to, and you want to live that simple plan of salvation so you have a hope of heaven as well, or if you're a Christian and you need the prayers and need help of the congregation for any reason at all, please come, and as we stand and sing the song, I select you. Thank you.